of discussion that is sadaqa or alms, what is known generally as alms. The case that we can talk about the eligibility of giving alms is in the cause of Allah, that is, in the way to spread Islam. The next one is to the wayfarer, Ibn al-Sabil, that is, a traveler or travelers who do not have enough money to go back home. Now, it comes to say that how we can give and pay these alms. God has forbidden giving the alms in some ways. The first way that has been introduced as a forbidden way is giving it out of pretensionness. Such an alms is invalid. Or giving alms, or giving the alms followed by reproaching the person to whom it is given, or telling them that one is generous. Such an alm also will not be rewarded by God. So we have to be careful not to give our alms out of pretensionness, and we should not reproach the other party that we are going to give the alms to. These are two sorts of alms that are invalid because they are not given for the sake of God, and if they were given for the sake of God, one's intention failed to remain purely for God. On the other hand, there are two ways of giving alms that are praised and adorned by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The first one is what we call it secret alms. If one gives the alms secretly, then he or she will be immune to pretensionness, and the needy person will not feel humiliated, since Islam always emphasizes pure intention for God and action that is more purely done for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, more virtuous. This is why God preferred a secret alms to an enclosed one. We have it in chapter 2, verse 271. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, if you conceal the alms, that is best for you. The next type of the alm which has been praised in Al-Quran and the narrations is disclosed alms. You might say that, oh, you have been talking about the secret alms, now you mention disclosed alms. Yes, this is praised because it is a public encouragement of others to give alms, as it is a relief for the poor and the needy in that they see that there are people in the community who are thoughtful about their conditions. It helps them overcome their despair. So how much should we actually give? How much should we give or pay as alms? The amount of alms actually depends on the person himself. One should be moderate in the amount of alms. Or on the other hand, one should not be mean, and on the other hand, one should not give too much so that he or she falls into financial trouble. The minimal amount of alms depends on one's financial ability. According to some hadith and narrations, even a cup of water counts as alms. The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at this story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
So, let's talk about the... There are two short topics that are left about the alms to be talked about. That is, blessings that usually follows after giving alms. It's very interesting to be known. There are many hadith concerning the virtues and blessings followed by alms, including being immune to catastrophes and terrible kinds of death. Imam Baqir alayhi salam said that sadaqa protects one from 70 sorts of catastrophes as well as terrible deaths. For a person who gives alms will never undergo a terrible death. Longevity is the next blessing of paying and giving alms. The Holy Prophet ﷺ said, Sadaq and family ties, silatul rahim, live in our cities and bring longevity. The next blessing of giving alms is healing the sick, according to a hadith. Heal your sick relatives by giving sadaqah. The next one is removing poverty. When you actually give alms, you are removing the poverty from your own family and relatives. The next point that I think it is worth to be talking about is the spiritual effects of sadaqah or giving alms. According to Al-Quran, the Holy Book of Allah says that giving alms for the sake of God is a beneficial transaction with God, since many divine rewards are given to people who give alms. It guarantees their going to the heaven, protects them from the fears of the doomsday, and saves them from divine tortures. Actually, it removes bad luck. You see, when you are, these are the spiritual benefits of giving alms. We talked about the blessings. Most of those blessings were, some material actually blessings. But when you see that bad luck is removed from you, it means that the doors and gates of blessing of Allah will be opened to you. According to a hadith from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, it says, whenever you go through a night to the morning, give alms to remove the bad lucks of that day from you. And whenever you go through a day to the night, give alms to remove the bad luck of that night from you. The next actually spiritual effect of giving sadaqah is helping to cross the Sirat bridge. This has been mentioned in a hadith or narration from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, where he says that I sought the way to cross the Sirat bridge and I found it in alms. The next spiritual benefit of giving alms is a guarantee for the heaven. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, I guarantee the heaven for six classes of people. A man who puts aside some alms, but he dies, this man goes to the heaven. The other classes that Imam referred to are a person who visits a patient and who goes to the holy war, that is jihad, or a person who practices Hajj rituals, or a person who goes to the Friday prayer, and a person who goes to a funeral. If they die and never return home, then they will be guaranteed to go to the heaven. Many thanks, dear brothers and sisters, for staying tuned and listening to this show of Lantern. I'll leave in Allah's protection. Wassalamu alaikum.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillahi
tatma'innul qulub. A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. all produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Western world claims to practice freedom of expression while it is proved that this motto is just a lie. When it comes to Palestinians and the issue of resistance, freedom of expression is widely restricted. This is evidently seen today by the actions of Facebook and Instagram in violating the rights of Palestinians during the Gaza war. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. The website of Middle East Eye wrote, Facebook and Instagram's policies during Israeli regime attacks on Gaza last year harmed the fundamental human rights of Palestinians, according to a report commissioned by the platform's parent company, Meta. The study, which was carried out by Consultancy Business for Social Responsibility, BSR, was obtained by The Intercept ahead of its publication recently. In May 2021, Meta was widely accused of censorship and bias during Israeli regime's assault on Gaza, which killed 256 Palestinians, including 66 children. Meta's actions in May 2021 appear to have had an adverse human rights impact on the rights of Palestinian users to freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, political participation, and non-discrimination, and therefore on the ability of Palestinians to share information and insights about their experiences as they occurred, the report said. Middle East Eye reported last year that concerns had been raised about deleted social media content and account suspensions in relation to Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in occupied East Al-Quds, where an Israeli crackdown on protests against forcible evictions sparked escalation in violence. According to the report, Meta deleted Arabic content related to last year's violence at a much greater rate than Hebrew language posts. This was found among posts reviewed by both automated services and employees. BSR attributed the difference in treatment to a lack of expertise. It concluded that Meta lacked staff who understood other cultures, languages, and histories, despite having over 70,000 employees and $24 billion in cash reserves. Potentially violating Arabic content may not have been routed to content reviewers who speak or understand the specific dialect of the content, the reporter stated. During the outbreak of violence, Palestinian and Arab social media users revived an old Arabic font in an attempt to beat Facebook's algorithm and express their support for Palestine. The BSR report fell short of accusing Meta of deliberate bias, pointing instead to unintentional bias leading to different human rights impacts on Palestinian and Arab-speaking users. It found that Meta's dangerous individuals and organizations policy referred to in the report as DOI, which prevents its users from praising or representing a number of groups, focus mainly on Muslim entities and therefore disproportionately impacted Palestinians. It said, Meta's DOI policy and the list are more likely to impact Palestinian and Arabic-speaking users, both based upon Meta's interpretation of legal obligations. Palestinians are more likely to violate Meta's DOI policy because of the presence of Hamas as a governing entity in Gaza and political candidates affiliated with designated organizations, the report said. The study concluded with 21 non-binding recommendations, which included increasing staff capacity to analyze Arabic posts and reforming the dangerous individuals and organizations policy. Meta vaguely committed to implementing 20 of the recommendations, according to Intercept. The company did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Its response to the report will be included when the document is published in full. In a footnote to the response seen by the Intercept, it said Meta's publication of this response should not be construed as an admission, agreement with, or acceptance of any of the findings, conclusions, opinions, or viewpoints identified by BSR, nor should the implementation of any suggested reforms be taken as admission of wrongdoing. According to Intercept, Facebook and Instagram's speech policies harmful fundamental human rights of Palestinian users during a conflagration that saw heavy Israeli regime attacks on the Gaza Strip last May, according to a study commissioned by the social media site's parent company Meta. Meta's actions in May 2021 appear to have had an adverse human rights impact on the rights of Palestinian users to freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, political participation, and non-discrimination, and therefore on the ability of Palestinians to share information and insights about their experiences as they occurred, says the long-awaited report, which was obtained by The Intercept in advance of its publication. Commissioned by Meta last year and conducted by the independent consultancy Business for Social Responsibility, or BSR, the report focuses on the company's censorship practices and allegations of bias during bouts of violence against Palestinian people by the Zionist regime forces last spring. Following protests over the forcible eviction of Palestinian families from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in occupied East Al-Quds, Israeli regime police cracked down on protesters in the West Bank and launched military airstrikes against Gaza that injured thousands of Palestinians, killing 256, including 66 children, according to the United Nations. Many Palestinians attempting to document and protest the violence using Facebook and Instagram found their post spontaneously disappeared without recourse, a phenomenon the BSR inquiry attempts to explain. Last month, over a dozen civil society and human rights groups wrote an open letter protesting Meta's delay in releasing the report, which the company had originally pledged to release in the first quarter of the year. While BSR credits Meta for taking steps to improve its policies, it further blames a lack of oversight at Meta that allowed content policy errors with significant consequences to occur. Though BSR is clear in stating that Meta harms Palestinian rights with censorship apparatus, it alone has constructed the report absolves Meta of intentional bias. Rather, BSR points to what it calls unintentional bias, instances where Meta policy and practice combined with broader external dynamics does lead to different human rights impacts on Palestinian and Arabic-speaking users, a nod to the fact that these systematic flaws are by no means limited to the events of May 2021. Meta responded to the BSR report in a document to be circulated along with the findings. Meta did not respond to Intercept's request for comment about the report by publication time. In a footnote in the response, which was also obtained by The Intercept, the company wrote, Meta's publication of this response should not be construed as an admission, agreement with, or acceptance of any of the findings, conclusions, opinions, or viewpoints identified by BSR, nor should the implementation of any suggested reforms be taken as admission of wrongdoing. According to the findings of BSR's report, Meta deleted Arabic content relating to the violence at the far greater rate than Hebrew language posts, confirming long-running complaints of disparate speech enforcement in the Palestinian conflict. The disparity, the report found, was perpetuated among posts reviewed both by human employees and automated software. The data reviewed indicated that Arabic content had greater over-enforcement, for example, erroneously removing Palestinian voice on a per-user basis, the report says. Data reviewed by BSR also showed that proactive detection rates of potentially violating Arabic content were significantly higher than proactive detection rates of potentially violating Hebrew content. BSR attributed the vastly differing treatment of Palestinian posts to the same systematic problems rights groups, whistleblowers, and researchers have all blamed for the company's past humanitarian failures, a dismal lack of expertise. Meta, a company with over $24 billion in cash reserves, lacks staff who understand other cultures, languages, and histories, and is using faulty algorithmic technology to govern speech around the world, the BSR report claimed. Not only do Palestinian users face an algorithmic screening that Israeli regime users do not, an Arabic hostile speech classifier that uses machine learning to flag potential policy violations and has no Hebrew equivalent, the report notes that the Arabic system also doesn't work well. Arabic classifiers are likely less accurate for Palestinian Arabic than other dialects, both because the dialect is less common and because the training data, which is based on assessments of human reviewers, likely reproduces the errors of human reviewers due to lack of linguistic and cultural competence, it claimed. Human employees appear to have exacerbated the lopsided effects of Meta's speech policing algorithms. Potentially violating Arabic content may not have been rooted to content reviewers who speak or understand the specific dialect of the content, the report says. It also notes that Meta didn't have enough Arabic and Hebrew-speaking staff on the hand to manage the spike in posts. Beyond Meta's failures in triaging posts about Sheikh Jarrah, BSR also points to the company's Dangerous Individuals and Organizations policy, referred to as DOI in the report, a roster of thousands of people and groups that Meta's billions of users cannot praise, support, or represent. The full list obtained and published by The Intercept last year showed that the policy focuses mostly on Muslim and West Asia entities, which critics described as a recipe for glaring ethnic and religious bias. Meta claims that it's legally compelled to censor mention of groups designated by the U.S. regime, but legal scholars have disputed the company's interpretation of federal anti-terrorism laws. Following The Intercept's report on the list, the Brennan Center for Justice called the company's claims of legal obligation a fiction.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, knowing the loss of leaking secrets. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the ways of keeping secret, but from the perspective of knowing the loss of leaking secrets. And obviously, when we see the Islamic teachings, we see that Islam gives importance to the secrets that we have, and therefore it does not allow us to leak other secrets. But one of the ways why the people are obviously, they don't care about the secrets of the others or others' personal life, it is because they are unaware, they're not acknowledged about that. And one of the ways is to know the danger, to know the loss that is waiting for us or for the community or for the others if we leak secrets, if people start leaking the secrets of each other, if people start backbiting each other, what will happen? The first thing that happens is that the society will no more be secure. It brings insecurity in the society. It brings insecurity amongst the friends, between the family members, among the family members. So no one will feel secure while sharing his feelings, his things, or maybe if he has a problem, even if it is not a secret, but obviously at this point he does not want to share it. He does not want others to know such thing. The people will not share things. The people will not ask or for the advice if they feel that the others will not keep their secrets or the things that they are sharing. So the first thing that a society or people in their relations they will face is having insecurity amongst them. Therefore, we need to keep secret and we should know about the danger of leaking secrets. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the ways of keeping secrets, and we said that one of the ways of keeping secret is to know about the danger and the loss of leaking secrets. So the first thing that generally a society face is that everyone will feel insecure and the society will become insecure if people are not keeping the secrets of each other. The second thing is that we become captive. And we become imprisoned of the secrets. As Imam Ali alayhi salam has said that when you have a secret, this secret is your captive, or you have made something imprisoned in your custody. It's in your custody. But if the secret has been leaked out, then obviously we'll become the captive of this secret. We will become the prisoner of this secret, because once we have imprisoned the secret, we had it in our heart, we shared it with others to keep it, but once it has been leaked, then now we have no secret and obviously everyone know about us. So this is what Imam has said. Therefore, one of the consequences, one of the dangers, it brings the insecurity. Number two, it makes you a prisoner if it is leaked. Therefore, we can see in the history there were many things, there were many secrets, or maybe there were highly, highly secure things which should not be leaked. But when they were leaked, obviously the other countries they conquered, maybe like they invaded the other countries because of knowing their secrets. So this is important that we should know about the consequences and the danger of leaking secrets. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Heat waves have become an unavoidable health hazard for many nations, but new data indicates that they are set to affect virtually every child on Earth by 2050, the UN's Children Fund, UNICEF, has warned. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams wrote, at least 559 million children worldwide are already exposed to frequent heat waves, a number that could hit 2.2 billion by 2050, according to a United Nations report published recently. The UN Children's Fund publication, The Coldest Year of the Rest of Their Lives, Protecting Children from the Escalating Impacts of Heat Waves, comes as governments that support the Paris Climate Agreement prepare for the COP27 summit in Egypt. Noting the November summit, the report calls on world leaders to reduce the threat of heat waves or any period of at least 3 consecutive days when the maximum temperature is in the top 10% of the local 50-day average by ambitiously increasing action to limit global temperature rise. In addition to high frequency, an average of 4.5 or more heat waves per year, the report warns of the rising threat of extreme high temperatures, or at least 83.54 days that top 35 degrees Celsius, as well as events that are high in duration, meaning they last 4.7 days or longer, and severity, which is when the temperatures are 2 degrees Celsius or more above the local 15-day average. At least 624 million children are currently exposed to one of the other 3 high heat measures, a scenario that UNICEF says will worsen over the next 3 decades. The mercury is rising and so are the impacts on children, said Catherine Russell, UNICEF's executive director, in a statement, adding, already 1 in 3 children live in countries that face extreme high temperatures, and almost 1 in 4 children are exposed to high heat wave frequency, and it is only going to get worse. She continued, more children will be impacted by longer, hotter, and more frequent heat waves over the next 30 years, threatening their health and well-being. How devastating these changes will be depends on the actions we take now. While Paris Agreement parties aim to limit global temperature rise this century to 1.5 degrees Celsius compared with pre-industrial levels, the UNICEF report examines the heat risks for children under 2 scenarios for average warming by 2050. increases of 1.7 degrees Celsius and 2.4 degrees Celsius. Children in northern regions will face the most dramatic increases in high heat wave severity, while by 2050, nearly half of all children in Africa and Asia will face sustained exposure to extreme high temperatures, the document restates, highlighting that almost every country is experiencing changing heat waves. As the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs and the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies pointed out earlier this month, in addition to children, agricultural workers, casual laborers, the elderly, migrants, and pregnant and breastfeeding people face a higher risk of illness and death from rising temperatures. The groups noted that projected future death rates from extreme heat are staggeringly high, comparable in magnitude by the end of the century to all cancers or all infectious diseases, and staggeringly unequal, with people in poorer countries seeing far greater levels of increase. Given the dangers, the UNICEF report stresses that going into COP27, governments must protect children from climate devastation by adapting social services, prepare children to live in a climate-changed world, prioritize children and young people in climate finance and resources, and prevent a climate catastrophe by drastically reducing greenhouse gas emissions and keep 1.5 degrees Celsius alive. Echoing the document's call to action, Russell said that at a minimum, government must urgently limit global heating to 1.5 degrees Celsius and double adaptation funding by 2025. This is the only way to save children's lives and futures and the future of the planet. The new publication was produced in collaboration with the Data for Children Collaborative and launched in partnership with Vanessa Nakate, a Ugandan youth climate leader and UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador, and the Africa-based Rise Up movement she founded. Nakate said the climate shocks of 2022 provided a strong wake-up call about the increasing danger hurtling towards us. Heat waves are a clear example. As hot as this year has been in almost every corner of the world, it will likely be the coldest year of the rest of our lives. The dial is being turned up on our planet, and yet our world leaders haven't begun to sweat. The only option is for us to continue to turn up the heat on them to correct the course we are on, she argued. World leaders must do this at COP27 for children everywhere, but especially the most vulnerable children in the most affected places. Nakate warned, unless they take action, this report makes it clear that heat waves will become even harsher than they are already destined to be. Guardian also wrote, the climate crisis is also a children's rights crisis. One in four children globally are already affected by the climate emergency, and by 2050, virtually every child in every region will face more frequent heat waves, according to a new UNICEF report. For hundreds of millions of children, heat waves will also last longer and be more extreme, increasing the threat of death, disease, hunger, and forced migration. The findings come less than a fortnight before the COP27 UN climate talks get underway in Egypt, and after a catastrophic year of extreme events, heat waves, storms, floods, fires, and droughts. have demonstrated the speed and magnitude of the climate breakdown facing the planet. According to UNICEF, 559 million children currently endure at least 4 to 5 dangerous heat waves annually. But the number will quadruple to 2 billion by 2050, even if global heating is curtailed to 1.7 degrees, currently the best-case scenario on the table. In the worst-case scenario, a 2.4-degree rise caused by burning too many fossil fuels for too long. An estimated 94% of children will be exposed to prolonged heat waves lasting at least 4.7 days by 2050, compared with 1 in 4 children right now. In this climate nightmare, only small areas of South America, Central Africa, Oceania, and Asia will escape dangerously long hot spells. Children and infants are less able to regulate their body temperature, making them more vulnerable to the pervasive impacts of extreme and prolonged heat than adults. This includes a myriad of health problems such as asthma, cardiovascular diseases, and even death. Additionally, as intense that exacerbates drought, it can also reduce access to food and water, which can stunt development and increase exposure to violence and conflict if families are forced to migrate. Studies have also shown that extreme heat negatively affects children's concentration and learning abilities. The hotter the planet gets, the more catastrophic the consequences. UNICEF researchers examined the potential exposure to 3 heat measures, including duration, severity, and frequency, based on 2 greenhouse gas scenarios used by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for climate models. They found in 2020 there were around 740 million children in 23 countries where temperatures topped 35 degrees Celsius on at least 84 days. Under the worst-case scenario, this will rise to 816 million children living in 36 countries, mostly in Asia and Africa. In such heat, day-to-day activities like play and school are compromised, and more children fall sick or die. Children in Europe will have the highest exposure to severe heat waves by 2050, 1 in 3 in the best-case scenario, 2 in 3 in the worst-case scenario. In the Americas, exposure to severe heat waves will rise fivefold from 13 million to 62 million children in 2050. By 2050, 5 million to 8 million children will be exposed to all 3 high heat measures compared with none in 2020.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. The faith of some Muslims is such that in order to keep it safe, they should never open a newspaper, they should never read a book, they should never open their eyes, they should never speak to anyone, they should never leave their home, they should never go outside. Such faith cannot last. The faith that is needed is a faith chosen based on awareness. This is a faith that will endure even in the most difficult and dire of circumstances, barring someone who is compelled whilst his heart is at rest in faith. The Quran, Surah 16, verse 106, which was revealed about the Prophet's companion, Ammar Yasir. The Quran says that if you are being tortured, and in order that the enemy leave you alone, you tell them what they want to hear. Your faith is not a faith that can be diverted from its proper direction by persecution. The faith of Khabbab ibn Arat, when they pointed red-hot irons at his throat, is no joke. When they brought those hot irons close to his body and touched them against his skin, his faith was so deep and so strong that even this burning iron couldn't make him surrender it. This faith is based on understanding, based on comprehension, based on thought, based on correct calculations. When we have this faith, it is not necessary to put this faith under a cover or lock it away to keep it safe from the trials and travails of this world, because nothing can harm it in the first place. It is only these unthinking kinds of faith that some people have with which we need to concern ourselves. Unless this happens, or unless that happens, or unless something else happens.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
If we want faith to stand firm, if we want faith not to vanish, and if we want faith to be based on understanding, then we must give knowledge to those people whom we want to be believers. We should not feel threatened by them learning. We should not deprive them of the enjoyment of gaining knowledge. Instead, we must make sure that the right knowledge is available for their hearts and minds, so that on the basis of this knowledge, they can nurture a true and strong belief, so that they will have a concrete foundation for their faith, so that their faith won't vanish when someone takes a shot at it. Islam says that faith must come from understanding. It is precisely this kind of faith that these verses at the end of Surah Ali Imran are describing. Indeed, in the creation of the heavens and the earth and the alternation of night and day, there are signs. The Quran, Surah 3, verse 190.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all. You've done for me through all my years. I've been
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The elegant streets of historic Sevastopol. Ukraine and NATO still claim this city and the rest of Crimea as part of Ukraine, despite the 2014 referendum on joining Russia. Down by the harbour, I wanted to know how people feel about Ukrainian threats of taking back this city.
Crimea is not baggage to transfer in and out. People don't want to return to Ukraine, and they never identified as Ukrainian.
I don't want Crimea to return to Ukraine. We are Russian. We speak Russian. We were raised as Russian, and we have Russian culture. I was born in 1986, and never in my life did I feel myself Ukrainian. I have Ukrainian citizenship, but all my life I considered myself Russian and living in a Russian city.
My personal opinion was Crimea was Russian and remains Russia. I'm an ordinary man and this is my opinion. It will be bad if someone wants to take away Crimea. But I'm against the war that is going on. It's terrible what is going on in my beloved Russia.
A Russian fighter jet flies overhead, a common occurrence, perhaps returning from a combat mission in Kherson. Sometimes cruise missiles can be seen from the harbour, fired by Russia's Black Sea Fleet, which is based in the city.
Let them dream. It's not harmful to dream. We are at home. Nobody asked our opinion when Crimea became part of Ukraine. We were forced to become Ukrainian citizens. 30 years later, we returned home. We were tormented and were worried. Ukrainians were treating us badly. Everyone here is Russian.
Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev gave Crimea to Ukraine in 1954. Many see that as a historic mistake, not reflective of the wishes of locals.
Now, I have found a couple of people who are more pro-Ukrainian. They don't want to say their views openly, and they do tend to be from a younger demographic born after the fall of the Soviet Union. But even amongst that age group, they are very much in the minority.
So Ukraine and NATO say that they want to take back Crimea from Russia. How do you feel about that?
I wish you good luck. Let's try. They can try, but they won't at all. It's a Russian place. What can I say more?
So we are Russians.
While Russia and Ukraine continue to claim this city as their own, one thing is not in doubt. The vast majority of people living here want to be part of the Russian Federation. Zhenimel, Sevastopol, Crimea.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has been under pressure for his hardline policy against North Korea, as tensions increase amid renewed large-scale military exercises with the U.S. This week, he sought to reassure the National Assembly and the public.
We will strengthen deterrence against North Korea with overwhelming capabilities through combined defense posture between South Korea and the U.S. and the trilateral security cooperation between South Korea, the U.S. and Japan so that our people can continue their daily lives without worry.
Progressive civil society worries the Korean Peninsula has fallen into crisis with unification becoming more and more remote. They oppose the military exercises, demanding an end to the drills and a rethinking of South Korea's alliance with the United States.
From the 31st, the South Korean and U.S. forces will conduct the largest ever joint air war exercise in Korea, with 250 Air Force units deployed to strike hundreds of strategic bases in North Korea at the same time. The Korean Peninsula should not be an outpost for American hegemony in the world. This land should not be an American war base.
The U.S.-South Korea drills have continued since the end of August, following North Korea's testing of dozens of ballistic missiles. South Korea this week staged a large-scale amphibious landing drill, North Korea views such military exercises as a rehearsal for invasion. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has emphasized the need for the U.S. to show a strong commitment toward extended deterrence, the so-called nuclear umbrella. But that may not be enough, with stronger conservative voices here calling for South Korea to develop its own nuclear weapons. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Lebanon and Israel have finalized a U.S. brokered deal aimed at resolving a maritime dispute. President Michel Aoun signed a letter on Thursday endorsing the agreement. The final paperwork was submitted to the United Nations in Naqoura, southern Lebanon, concluding a long path of indirect negotiations with the Israeli regime. Separately, the Israeli cabinet, led by Prime Minister Yair Lapid, also approved the agreement. The regime's representative then delivered the signed copy to the UN at the Naqoura point. Hezbollah Secretary General stressed in a brief statement that the deal is a victory for Lebanon's government, people, and resistance. Nasrallah also declared the end of Hezbollah's exceptional mobilization over the maritime dispute, saying the resistance movement had accomplished its mission regarding the issue. The Hezbollah leader said the agreement is not an international treaty.
What happened in Naqoura is not normalization with Israel. This deal is not an international treaty and is not a recognition of Israel. Israel itself has admitted it received no security guarantees.
U.S. Envoy Amos Hochstein, who was with the Lebanese delegation in the southern Lebanese town of Naqoura, had met the top Lebanese officials.
I truly believe and hope that this can be an economic turning point in Lebanon for a new era of investment and continued support to lift up the economy and make sure that whatever arrangements happen, they're done openly, transparently, and making sure that the benefits are felt directly by all the Lebanese people.
Experts believe this agreement would put Lebanon on the map of natural gas exporters. President Michel Aoun stressed in his statement that demarcating the southern maritime border is a technical matter that has no political implications and won't change his country's policy towards the Israeli regime. U.S. President Joe Biden has hailed the maritime border deal as a historic breakthrough. For Lebanon, it unlocks the possibility to exploit its own natural resources at a time when the West is seeking gas suppliers and looking for alternatives to Russian gas. Maryam Saleh, Naqoura, South Lebanon.
Many millions of people living across the 27-nation EU are struggling to survive. Brussels resident Jefferson Araujo has endured two rent increases since March. His landlord says her mortgage is going up and so a further rent hike is needed.
You go to the market, you cannot buy anything anymore because the price is too high. And I'm thinking maybe to leave Brussels because I'm working in a hotel 10 hours a day. Like sometimes I have just one day off a week.
In an attempt to bring down soaring inflation, the European Central Bank, which manages the euro, has announced interest rates are going up by a further 75 basis points. That represents a huge increase for people repaying home loans. The economic outlook could get even worse, the ECB warns.
Confidence could deteriorate further, and supply-side constraints could worsen again. Energy and food costs could also remain persistently higher than expected.
Some EU leaders have warned the ECB that increasing interest rates so aggressively could push the eurozone into a deep recession. Higher rates impede business expansion and employment. Charities fighting social injustice often point out all of those taking the decisions that lead to higher inflation and interest rates are insulated from the impact simply because they are the richest individuals in society. Critics say the EU's move to cut out Russia's cheap gas over the war in Ukraine is backfiring. Despite this, a ninth round of sanctions against Moscow is being prepared.
The Commission and the EES are obviously constantly working in the context of the sanctions on making sure that we are ready should there be a need.